to Papa. Come see your Papa.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Come to Papa. I'm Tom Papa, and my guest today is the very funny and striking Kathleen Madigan. Kathleen is simply one of the funniest working comedians today. Her highly acclaimed new Showtime special, Gone Madigan, has quickly become one of the most respected new releases in years. And when you listen to it, you are treated to a comedian who is truly in her prime. There is no mistake that Kathleen is one of the most sought-after comedians of the day, working theater gigs, clubs, television appearances, and can be heard on these waves, radio waves, all the time here at Sirius XM. She was also voted one of the favorite comedians played on Sirius XM radio. And I welcome the lovely Kathleen Madigan. In fact, Kathleen, you win a lot of things. In addition to the Sirius XM thing, you won the American Comedy Award for Best Female Comedian and the Phyllis Diller Award for the Best Female Comedian. Now, when you win those awards...
I don't know how seriously you can take that Phyllis Diller one because they spelled my name wrong on the trophy.
Well, she's wacky. She's wacky.
It just said Kathleen. They forgot the L. Nope. I didn't mail it back. I don't have that kind of money.
No, but seriously, when you win these awards and you're back home in bed at night, and how much in your mind are you thanking me for your success?
That's the first two. First, I thank Jesus.
Right.
And then Tom Papa.
That's good.
That's exactly how That's it really goes. Nice.
Well, yeah. I'm glad I could help you out so much.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that we've finally gotten to a point where people just call you a funny comedian?
I think work-wise, with around us, yes.
Yeah.
Other comedians just think of me as a comic.
Right.
They don't think of me as like a chick comic or a
right.
female comic. But the media still tends to bring it up.
They do?
They don't, yeah. And,
really?
You know, there's so many times you want to shove your head through the wall when they go, now, do you feel being a female comedian,
uh-huh.
the difference, and they mean well, and you can't in an interview go, you know
yeah.
what, go online, I've answered this question 7,000 million times, but
exactly.
they're still, and they're like, well, does it bother you that there's, you know, awards for female comedians and awards for male comedians? They're like, well, there's Grammy Awards for men and women or different
right.
categories, Academy Awards
right.
are in the category. I will take any award.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care what the category is. I don't care how sexist it is to put me in a little box.
Right, right.
It's more free exposure.
If you can come up with the funniest Kathleen Madigan award,
yes,
I'll take it.
They could say women under 5'2" who are from Missouri, and the winner's Kathleen. Yes!
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 It was a real
yes,
nail biter.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was
between
come
me and my mom. I knew it. I knew I could kick her ass.
I'd just like to thank the other nominees.
She doesn't even have a tight 30. I knew I could do it.
I really feel like we have a lack of good writers in the States who can write about comedy with any kind of intelligence. They just spit back, and then he told that joke about this,
yeah.
and this, and then but no one really kind of, because you'll see like overseas and stuff, they really like care about it and write about it as
they
like
know.
An art form.
Yeah. Who's the guy in Vanity Fair? An older writer wrote this whole article about why women aren't funny and all this stuff.
Oh,
and
was like, that Christopher Hitchens?
No, it wasn't Christopher Hitchens. It was before that because
right.
I know his stuff. I can't remember, but
yeah.
he didn't even... The article was so like off base. Like the people
uh-huh.
he chose to focus on, like nobody
right.
in the business would have taken that seriously.
Yeah.
Like I could make arguments for anything where it would sound knowledgeable. It didn't even... He just missed the boat
right.
completely. And he's
because they don't get into... They don't really understand or respect comedy, I feel.
No, well, we're always the bastard child. Always.
Yeah.
I mean, we just did Bonnaroo, and
uh-huh.
Bonnaroo has been mentioned in Rolling Stone this month.
The New York Times.
New York Times yesterday.
I read yesterday's Times.
There is not one
no.
mention of
I know.
Any of us.
It's so frustrating.
Louis Black, Ralphie May.
Yeah, Ted
me,
Alexandro.
Ted
yeah.
was there. I mean, there Eugene Meerman.
Yeah.
We had a great
all
tent.
All these great...
We had a great tent. Tig was there.
I know. I was watching all of your tweets about it, and I had done Bonnaroo before, and I'm not there, and I see all these great people there, and I'm jealous. I'm just like, oh, they're having such a great time. They're in the
so
tent.
Much
this
fun.
Is such. They had such a great lineup of talent. These are real artists. And then I get the New York Times. I'm on the subway yesterday, and I'm big Bonnaroo article, and I'm skimming through it. I just glaze right over the music to get to the comedians, so I can be more jealous. Nothing.
Rolling Stone was there and had a press tent and invited none of us in it.
Oh, my God.
Nobody. Like, Lou got invited to one sort of massive thing where they're like, anybody that's going to be on stage can come in here and comment on something. Like, we just wandered in looking for hot dogs. I mean, I'm like, wait, is this a free hot dog tent?
Can I get a free magazine with Zach Galifianakis on it?
Yeah. We are always the bastard children of, quote, art. But, like, I always, Lou and I always go round and round because I always laugh when it says artist in my contract.
Right.
The artist will this, the artist will that. And he's like, I don't know why you laugh at that. I go, I just don't think of myself as an artist. I think of myself as a comic. I go, okay, Lou, here's something you're ever going to hear when you get to heaven at the gate. Beethoven, Monet, O'Keefe, Bach, and bring it up the rears, Madigan. No. They are artists. I am a comic.
No, but I kind of, I'm not going to let you get away with that. I think Lou is right. I think that there is, and I think that we kind of just are, for whatever reason, there's a couple of reasons for it, I think. But I think that comedy is a true art because I think that comedy, a great joke, a really great joke is the same as poetry. You've taken all of the fat out. You're saying this immense idea in one line. Right,
if it just pops into your head.
Well, you think that Jackson Pollock was sitting there thinking, "How am I going to get these squiggles to go?" No, it was his nature, and he spits out paint, and that's what he creates. That's how you create. Nobody else can think of the lines that you think of.
I guess, but I don't. I guess I consider art to be harder.
Other
laying
people's
around
art.
With a beer waiting for things to fly in here.
Yeah, but Keith Richards smoking weed and shooting heroin and fiddling around with a guitar.
Yeah, but he had to practice the guitar. You don't just wake up and be able to play a guitar. You have to practice.
Yeah, but there's also a natural musicianship to him.
Correct.
And stuff.
Right.
It's just everybody thinks other people's art is more difficult.
Probably.
But for them, it's the easiest thing in the world.
Lou always wins this argument, but I still walk away going, I'm a fucking road comic. Whatever, Lou. And I know he's right.
You're the reason we have bad writers.
Yes, I am. I am the reason one takes it seriously.
Here's the other thing. Here's the other reason that I think that we don't think that it's an art form here. Like, if you go to London, they have everybody sits in like a theater kind of environment and they sell drinks at intermission. And with us, a lot of times, especially, you know, going on the road, you know, they're really in business to sell beer and buffalo wings.
Right. We could be strippers.
Right.
It just so happens we're not cute enough and we've thought of something funny.
Right, exactly. You just go up and distract them while I send them these chicken fingers.
This is exactly, because at Bonnaroo, like all those music, what's great about being a comic at Bonnaroo is we're sneaking in on a festival. We're like spying on a festival. Because like we walked in, Chuck Wharton, our friend, has a term for whenever they have like 20 comics a night. He calls it idiot roulette because you're going to walk in and see like six people you really want to see and then just this wheel of idiots of comics that you're like, oh, really? Do I have to talk to him? Yeah. But like a comedy festival, to go into the bar at Montreal afterwards is massive idiot roulette.
Right.
I mean, because you're thrown in non-comics now and club people. But at Bonnaroo, I was looking at all these music people and they like the managers and agents and they all kind of seem like, maybe they wanted to be musicians. They kind of seem like that was their dream. It didn't work out. So instead, they're going to be a manager, an agent. Nothing wrong with that. But in comedy, I never look at like the people, our agents or club owners, as failed comics. I just look at them as guys that went, well, strippers are a pain in the ass. I'll just open a comedy club.
Right.
But they were this close to opening a strip club.
Right.
It's not that they wanted to be a comic or they don't think any of us are really funny. They don't understand why it works. They don't understand why people show up every Friday. Friday. Yeah, there's just a different vibe. Like the music, people are all kind of cool and hip. Everyone's got great sunglasses.
Right.
We're walking around going, I need a hat. It's so hot. Are they selling hats?
I need sunscreen.
Jesus, why didn't anybody think of this?
It's just complaining. I remember being at Bonnaroo and just being on stage, and you're in these tents, and you can hear the bass from like Dave Matthews Band in another place, and I was like, why is anybody listening to me? We could all just run out and go see Dave Matthews right now.
Exactly. We could get somebody better in this tent than us. I know. I thought that too.
That's pretty great that you were down there doing it, because there is kind of a perception for those kind of gigs like that or Coachella, where it's it's the cool kids. It's the, you know, the I don't care ripped jeans comic.
Right.
And you are, and I mean this as a complete compliment, you are just this true professional. And I always admire you because you can go anywhere. You could pop up at Bonnaroo in the mud, or you can show up at some corporate gig.
I could put on a monkey suit and be that lady they want me to be for an hour.
Right,
no
exactly.
Cursing. It's all well thought out. Yeah. It's all just kind of offensive, but she's cute, so it's not really that offensive.
Yeah. I have that
she looks
thing.
Like our neighbor who drinks beer in the backyard.
Right. She gets a little racy, but it's okay from her.
Just, she's had too many beers. Yes, I know what you mean. I have never been part of the cool kid club.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah, me neither. But the cool kids like you. But
they
do.
Yeah, I was really shocked. Like, I am really good friends with Greg Proops, but I think his comedy is way above mine on a different weird level. And I do think of him, he can go in both worlds. Mm-hmm. He can run around, but he's more in the cool kid club.
Right.
Well, I've put him there. I'm not saying he says he's there. I've
in the
put
world,
him in
the
there.
The comedy world you have in your head.
Yeah, so like when he asked me to do his show at Largo, I'm always surprised because I don't fit into Margaret Cho's going to sing this week or whatever. Good for you, Margaret. But you will never see me singing on stage unless it's a joke.
That's
a
right.
joke that needs to be sang. I do not think of myself in the cool kid. But I also don't. I've always found the cool kid club to be kind of sad.
In what way?
The people that are in it.
Yeah.
They're kind of, they're just kind of sad.
Yeah. Like nobody, why are you so angry, cool guy?
Yeah. Everybody just in the corner in the dark with your little hemp notebook and just kind of upset.
Kind of angry.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know, just a vibe of not, I don't know, Midwest retard fun. That's what I'm looking for. I mean, me and Janine Garofalo in a van, happy. Janine, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
She's thinking hard. I'm thinking about nothing except, wow, this is kind of like France, but not. I love it here.
Yeah, why are you so down,
Janine? I can't wait to smoke weird French cigarettes. I love this place. That's what I'm thinking. And she's writing down serious thoughts.
I know. I saw a quote from her. She said something like, if you're not up on stage trying to say something, you have no business being up there. And I was like, I felt for her because she really believes it. And that's why her comedy is good in that way. Like, she really wants to say something.
Right. But it's
comedy. And some people can just get up and talk about their dog and make people laugh for an hour, like, till they're falling over. That guy has a reason to be up there, too.
Right.
We're not politicians.
Well, if I really had something to say, I probably wouldn't be a comic. I mean, I'd probably be a politician. Or, like,
right.
I do sometimes.
Be a chuckles.
Yeah, right. I don't think my tax return would say bonkers.
Yeah. The girl with the penis hat for a bachelorette party isn't the person I'd be talking to.
How seriously can you take me? Look at the sign.
Right.
It says flappers.
Do you ever play Bananas?
Oh, yeah. Go Bananas? Yeah, in Cincinnati?
No, this Bananas in Jersey and Poughkeepsie, New York.
I did not play those.
They have so many bananas on stage. Like, literal, like, they're good people, but it's a ballroom, and they convert it to a club for that night, you know, like at the Marriott or whatever. And you're on stage. You have to tell people at first that you're going to be appearing at Bananas, which is tough to say. And then you have to, then you get on stage, and there's inflatable banana, there's ripe bananas, there's a giant cardboard banana, and it's like, back to your earlier thing, maybe I'm not an artist.
Yeah, really? I don't think they, you know, back in the day when Beethoven was going to go to the palace to play something.
Right, exactly. He was like,
get the bananas out! Beethoven's coming. Is he going to be offended? Who cares?
Who cares?
I'm the king.
We got to get the name out there. You're listening to Come to Papa on Raw Dog Sirius XM 99. My guest is the lovely Kathleen Madigan. Do you ever feel like you should say something on stage? You ever have those moments where you're like, maybe I should try and be more meaningful, or I should talk about this or that?
No. And the things that run through my head, like, I haven't done this on stage, but I'm gonna because I think it's funny. There's this person I really don't like that karma never seems to catch up with.
Yeah.
So I think there should be a service like called Karmagrams. Like, I want someone to walk into his office and punch him in the throat. But I can't.
Right.
Because he knows me. And I don't want to get caught.
And I'm tired of waiting for karma.
Speed karma up. So, but it could be a good karmagram, too, where you just felt like, today I'm going to send Tom a pizza. And right. A guy comes and goes, it's karma. Yay. I don't know. Boom, you got a pizza.
That's
so you
brilliant.
Can do it. There's just karma does not move fast enough. And then people go, oh, just wait. Well, what's the point? I don't want to wait.
Right.
I want the bad things to happen now to this guy.
Why is karma so busy?
Right. God, how long is the line for assholes?
Take this guy
down. Can we move mine forward? How do I get him forward in the line? That's not really a thought that needs to be kept forever in anyone's mind. It's just a little chuckle.
Right.
That's all.
But it's great. But it's at the same time, it's pretty brilliant.
But I also haven't thought things through enough to actually say anything. Like every time I read health insurance, the whole Obama, I don't understand it. Right. And then I read it again and I don't understand it. I try. Every month I try again until I try to get a handle on it. So now I can only write jokes about not understanding it.
Right.
So I can't really write a joke about it.
I know.
Because
exactly.
I have no setup.
Right.
Except that it's hard.
I know. I feel that way about the Middle East. It's like our entire lives, something about the Middle East has been on the front page every single day.
Yeah.
And I can't puncture through it.
And I still don't care.
Right.
No matter how much they try to make me care.
Exactly.
I don't. And I've been there and I've done shows there.
Yeah.
And I care about the troops, but that's really it.
Right.
The whole place just needs. Was it John Carpenter? He used to go, here's how you fix the Middle East. He's doing a dock worker character. Double elimination softball tournament. Winner gets Jerusalem. That's a very good plan, I think.
That's a really good point, though. You do a lot of USO stuff, right?
I did a tour. We just did Afghanistan again over this Christmas.
Wow.
It's horrible. Best shows you'll ever have on the planet, though.
Right.
We're so happy to see anybody.
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 Yeah.
My mom can get up and do 10, and they'd be like, oh, Vicky Madigan rocks! And that's all tent shows, too. Most of them outside with no tent.
Wow.
Freezing your ass off.
Wow. And that's a group that does not care about you saying something deep. They just make us laugh.
Oh, yeah. They don't want to hear deep.
Right.
And I mean, I think some people are good at deep. Like, I think Lewis is always saying something on stage, but he always goes to silly, too. Even though he's ranting and raving, if you really listen, it goes back to silliness or back to him.
Right.
Which is always, he always goes the self-deprecating route in a way, which I like and I find endearing. But to say, I don't know, if comics get too deep, you've lost me.
Yeah, well, there's got to be jokes.
Right.
There's got to be jokes.
And you're not really smart enough to go that deep, probably.
Right.
Or, again, we wouldn't be at Crackers. You probably would have gotten moved on in some college program into something like history professor, or I don't know, something a little more creative than $1,100 a week and free chicken wings.
It's not that sad.
No, it's not. I love our job. I love that I can walk into a club and just recently and the bar, because mostly I'm doing theaters, so I like to do like three clubs. I like Detroit, I like Denver, I like Nashville Zanies.
Right.
Just because they're old school and fun.
Yeah.
I walked in and the bartender, Dave, was like, Kathleen, you want to do a shot? And I was like, no. What are you, a pansy? I thought, dude, I just walked into work.
Right.
Like, you could walk into IBM at 8 in the morning. My brothers have their engineers, very serious jobs. Hey, Joe, you want a shot? No. What are you, gay? What does that have to do with this? I don't want to start drinking the minute I walk into work. That 8 o'clock show is the only line between me and full-blown alcoholism.
That's
Let's
right.
keep it. As soon as that line goes away, I turn into Arthur.
Right.
There has to be a job somewhere.
Yeah, let me pretend that I'm working.
Yeah. I'm going to act serious till 8, till 9:04 when I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm going to be very serious.
Those are the only clubs you do anymore?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
I think on my whole list, everything else is a theater gig.
Yeah.
And Zany's is old school, which
yeah.
I love.
I was just there for the first time, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I just one of those where I never hit it all those years. And
I didn't hit it in the beginning. I didn't hit it till I was a headliner, which was weird because I started in St. Louis. But it was like kind of everybody used to say, oh, it's rough and tumble. And then it was like, we don't know if we want to book women down there.
Really?
Yeah, the women aren't doing well. And you really got to be like, and I don't know. I just didn't get in till late. But I love it.
Right.
It is kind of old school, rough housing.
Yeah, a little bit.
But, you know.
But, you know, they start laughing.
Well, the manager
stops it.
I know. Their manager, Rosemary, when I went there like last year or something, and I go, well, the economy doesn't seem to have affected the crowds here, right? We were sold out every night. She goes, Kathleen, these people aren't part of an economy. They don't have a 401k or an IRA.
Yeah.
They get their $300 on Friday, come here and get drunk and worry about it on Saturday.
Right.
But she's right. Like, there's this whole group of people that when they go, the stock market's crashing, they're like, whatever, turn on SportsCenter.
Sorry, New York.
Wah, wah. Oh, the Hamptons, is everything for sale? They're not part of an economy.
That's hilarious. Have you changed the way that you come up with your stuff at all from when you started? Did you?
No.
You work the same exact way?
The same exact way.
Right.
Which is just crap flies into my head. And now I actually, well, I've always written it down on napkins, but now I'll put it in my BlackBerry.
Really?
That's how far I've gone.
No notebooks?
No, I have notebooks, but I take the notebook to work, but I don't have it with me now.
Right.
So I would.
So you just punch it into there.
Yeah, and I think it's a statement of the level of my drinking that there's always a bar napkin near me. Oh, look, a bar napkin. Maybe because you're in a bar, Kathleen.
Right.
No,
that's so
and
strange.
I don't write sit down and write jokes.
Never have.
Nope. Wow. If need be.
Right.
I find that I'm much better at writing jokes for other people.
Uh-huh.
Like if I know their voice. Like I've written for Gary Shandling or Lou or something.
Yeah.
If they have a clear, distinct voice and point of view.
You could. Right.
Yeah, but I don't think I could sit around. I guess maybe I could, but I'd be bored, I think, to write a Tonight Show monologue.
Uh-huh.
So today, Hillary Clinton.
Right.
It's like puzzle.
But you're very
it's like a puzzle. Then it becomes like math to me. Like, I think I could do that.
Yeah.
But I would just be
kind
of bored because I don't care about that stuff.
Right. So your stuff is just coming from
it's
whatever's
stuff I care about.
Just pops into your head.
Our
and
stuff,
then,
I watched the debates, the Republican debate, and not much popped into my head.
Uh-huh.
But
that's
it
funny.
Will. Sometimes it takes a week. I can't pinpoint who, what, where.
Right.
That's like when I see those books, you know, the artist way. Maybe they help some people, but I'm like, mine would just be open. Mine would just say, I don't know, shit'll fly into your head or it won't. And I've never picked up a pattern. When I'm really well rested. No.
Right.
No. Sometimes hungover. Yeah. That works too. There's no pattern or rhyme or reason. And I was always amazed in comedy condos when a guy would write for 2 hours a day.
Right.
I would just stare at him and go, when you're done, can we go to the mall?
Right.
And then I think, oh, I should be doing that. And I'm like, nah.
Nah, it's working all right.
Yeah, everything's fine.
But what do you do? Do you rewrite stuff? Or do you work that out on stage?
All on stage.
It's all on stage.
Yeah. Or in my head when I get off stage, where you know, okay, if I'd have flipped that or something, that would have worked better or something.
Is your whole act down in some form somewhere? Or is it all in your head?
words are down, but it's never
just
been
like an outline
that.
Kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, like if you open, if I was in a car accident and they saw that, they'd think I was like seriously crazy.
Because it's
they'd
just
be like, wow,
just a list of words.
Amish goat. Yeah, just this random. It looks like a Larry King column.
Oh, she was crazy.
Oh, the poor lady was nuts. Yeah. Oh.
See, but this is very disheartening to me because. You're really prolific. Like, you crank out a lot of material, and it's always really fresh. And
sometimes a month goes by, I don't think anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, literally. And then, but I don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Because so far, 25 years, there hasn't been that big of a gap. It wasn't like, right. I wasn't like a real artist that goes, I had to take a year off. How can you take a year off and do what?
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah, no.
Forget it.
No, it never goes more than like a month. And then, but I also think it's when stuff's boring, like politics is starting again, and then that gets me interested. There was just a lull there.
Yeah.
Like nothing.
Right, just nothing.
Everyone
really
in my family's acting normal. I don't understand what's happening. Like, come on, toys, you're broken. Say something. Do something. Yeah.
Write my act.
Yeah. I know. Dad, I'm waiting. TikTok.
How much are you on the road these days?
A ton. Yeah. Like September through May, I was gone every single night. Now, the summer is goof off. Mostly goof off stuff. Well, Bonnaroo.
Right.
And then I'm doing like Zanies for fun in July in Nashville. Salt Lake, like a club one night that I've never done, and then a corporate gig, a couple corporate gigs.
Right.
I just took a lot. I took summer.
Downshift from the
summer. Unless you're going to work in clubs, there's no theaters.
No, it's
Nantucket, there's a comedy festival. Lou and I are going to do that. Fun stuff.
It took me so many years to figure out, summers are hard to get audiences.
Yeah. They don't want to go in a dark, depressing club when they haven't seen sun in 8 months.
I'd be doing press and pushing and a half-filled club and just like, man, I'm awful. And then you realize, everyone's at the beach.
Right. Oh, everybody's in their softball league tonight. Maybe we should do comedy in a tent at the softball field. We'd get more people than we would. And especially in theaters, you don't want to risk, I don't want to go try to sell 1,200 tickets in Wisconsin. People haven't—they've been snowed in.
Right. Let them out. It's almost unfair to ask them to come back inside.
It's terrible. It's like, I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Did I invite you in here? No, I didn't mean that. No, like Summerfest—that was another fun gig, but I don't think they're doing comedy anymore.
Where were we? Where were we when we got? There was a huge storm.
Chicago.
We were at the airport. Yeah, Chicago. Right.
The comedy festival. TBS.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was a huge storm, and we couldn't get to L.A. and just started drinking.
Yeah, we gave up.
And watching golf and drinking.
Yes. That was the show that we taped that my mom later in a car, while her and my dad were in the front seat, she was like, it was like when Kathleen was on that show and her eye makeup looked Chinese. And I was like, what? I was on television where I looked Chinese. Yeah, I didn't want to say anything, but it was a while back. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, pinpoint it. Chuck's friend was on there. And I'm like, okay. So it was Tom. So you're saying that you're Chuck. You're always just Chuck's friend. And my mom.
That's
my idea. Oh, Chuck's friends hosting that show. That's nice. No, like, his name is Tom. Mom, why don't you try to get a hold of that? I forever, though, will hold you as Chuck's friend. Chuck's friend in a pocket.
There was some article we were reading in the... That's what it was. When we finally got on the plane, I think I started texting you because I was behind you. I think a comedy issue for a magazine or something, and one of the comedians they were interviewing was Glenn Beck.
Oh, right.
Right? He was going out on tour, and he was talking about comedy, like that he was a comedian.
And he said he felt that he was very much like Lewis Black.
That's right.
Right. Then I call Lou and go, guess who's your biggest fan, Lou? Who's crazy now? Yeah. Is it Glenn or is it Lou? Who's causing this, Lewis? Maybe you are.
You have a secret friend you want to tell me about? that guy was... He's actually the opposite of a comedian.
Right.
And it really... Because it's not a right-left thing. It's a... no comedian just tries to scare people.
Right.
Which is all he does.
Because they would leave the club.
Right.
Right? It's, well, and he's having a nervous breakdown, and that's fine. But if you want to be a comedian, it needs to be a funny nervous breakdown.
That's right. One that we can laugh at.
Yeah. The one that we can all mock and be glad it's not us.
Right.
This is, he just, I feel bad for him. Like, wow.
Yeah, I know.
Like, he's seriously having a nervous, a psychotic meltdown on television, and no one's stopping it.
Yeah.
For his sake.
I know. Right.
Like,
exactly.
Somebody call me and go, Glenn, come here. Let's go to quiet time for a while.
Right.
Let's have a cocktail.
Yeah.
Let's get quiet.
Things aren't ending.
Quiet. No.
That's his problem. He can't have a cocktail.
Oh, right. He's
right.
A Mormon.
Yeah.
Right.
We're recovering. He was an addict.
Oh, that too?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I was blaming it on Mormon.
No, there's a lot in there.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But
wow.
it all comes together. He actually does have the makeup for a comic, an recovering alcoholic,
right.
Strange background,
weird,
kind of paranoia,
family.
But it kind of got too much. He went to Cat Williams land. It's starting to devour
him
now.
He got arrested again. Did you see that? For beating up a guy on a tractor.
What happened?
I mean, we got it.
Cat Williams.
I didn't understand the article. It was on Twitter, and it said Cat Williams arrested. For assaulting man on tractor.
Wow. Why is Cat Williams anywhere near a tractor?
Exactly. That's what the sentence made me laugh so hard. I'm like, oh my God, now he's like going out into the country to get crazy.
Yeah.
Like, usually he's within the city limits where he's going crazy or he's got a gun. He's always brandishing a weapon.
He lives down south, right?
And I think it was on his farm. Something went awry with the tractor, and then some women that were there started throwing rocks at this guy. I was with a friend who knows nothing about comedy, and I go, I'm really sorry you don't know that much about comedy because this is so funny. And he always, it's never anything horrible.
Right.
Like, Cat never, it's always just like, remember when he was
bizarre.
Shooting that movie and he like broke into his own house?
Right, he got arrested for burglary. Like,
yeah, but
into
it
his
was where
house.
He was staying while yeah. shooting the film, but then there was pot there.
And other
like,
people were living
so,
there at the time
yeah,
or something.
There were other people living there, and he's like climbing in a window to get pot or something. It's always like jackass stuff.
It's so hysterical. He's like, yeah, he's like the funny version of Glenn Beck.
He's my hero on some level. Like, it's
I know.
Always,
I tell you, I saw him. I was flipping through the iPad on the YouTubes, and I saw his special, and it was the stuff he was doing about Michael Jackson. I was... You know, how often do you, like, fall out laughing to a comedian these days, right? I was crying middle of the night just laughing. He was so funny. I mean, he really is a talent.
He really is. And then every time that I like, berate myself, like, oh, I'm not working hard or I'm not thinking enough new material, I'm like... You really don't have to. Cat Williams is a multimillionaire. He's just running around with a bag of pot somewhere, climbing in the wrong windows. Like, I'm so far ahead of him in the responsibility category that I can be easier on myself.
Yeah.
Cat doesn't judge himself every night like this, Kathleen.
That's
no,
right.
No.
Yeah.
He just goes, man, that fool shouldn't have been on that tractor out there. I told him not to. Them bitches threw rocks at him. That's not my fault.
Do you have those? How often do you have those moments where you kind of feel like I should... do more, work harder, that kind of stuff.
I don't ever think I should work harder because I work my ass off, but I do think that, like, I don't know, like, I'll be in town and let's say I have 4 days off.
Yeah.
I'm like, I should really go do a set somewhere. I should really. And then I'm like, why? Why?
Yeah.
Why do I need to go to the improv? Really, all I want to do is drink at the bar with Eddie.
Right.
I don't need to be on stage again, but it's like, well.
You have that thing, though.
Yeah, go do a set.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. But you know what?
Why
about
do you think that is? Do you think it's... Because I have the same thing. Like, I can't... I take one night off a week if I'm in town, if that. And it's... Is it an addiction to being on stage?
No, because, like, if I'm in Missouri with my family, I don't even think about it at all.
You
it's
don't.
Like, the reason I live in L.A. is for work.
Right.
So what am I doing sitting home? I'm home so infrequently that I should work while I'm in town.
Which is kind of weird because then you're You are living your life, though. It's like you've actually, you look at LA like a giant office building in a way.
It is. It's a giant office. There'd be no reason I would own a home there for any other reason than work.
Right.
So I think, well, I should, I think, what else am I doing today? Like, you know, TV guy, I don't go, want to come over and talk about the 50 hottest Euro stars? Not really, but.
Right. You said TV in the sentence.
I heard hair and makeup. Okay, I'll come. Yeah.
Did you feel like you needed to be on stage all the time when you were younger, though, just to get sharper and get better.
Yeah, like, well, this has got to catch up where now, after 25 years, I mean, the confidence that I have, is that's what you're always trying. I was always trying to gain.
Right.
I don't ever want to walk on stage and think this could get out of hand and I might not be able to handle it.
Right.
That has to go away. That took like 10 years.
It's a long time, yeah.
Because each level you get confident, they're moving you up another one.
Right.
I was confident with my 15. Like,
that's right.
I can handle anything that happens in the next 15 minutes. But then they stretch it out to 30 and I'm like, this could get weird.
Right.
And then they stretch it out to an hour and I'm like, I could end up crying.
Right.
Like, it just keeps going into crazier spots.
It's true.
With the push.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, now that I'm here, you know, I don't even have to look at like a set list. They'll go, if in a theater I go do an hour 20. I still think I do.
Uh-huh.
Like, but I forgot my notebook.
You?
Yeah, I look at it, but
I realize it
doesn't do anything. I mean, I have a
Unless
page
you haven't
of
worked.
New stuff, like where I'm like, oh yeah, I want to try that, and I want to try that, and I want to try that.
Right, right. Just to get it in your head before you walk out.
Right. But otherwise, no.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard though. It's like there's a real letting go. Like,
let it go.
Right,
yep.
Because you can be working for years and years. You're doing great stuff. Everybody looks at you like, oh, total pro, whatever. But you still could have those moments of not being so confident.
Or just needing that's the habit, too. Like, if I'm going to do Leno or one of the talk shows, I still have a set list of 6 words in my hand that I will not let go of until I am 2 seconds away from being called, and then I throw it on the floor with my glasses and go.
I know. And what's weird about that, because I do the same thing, is a lot of times you're sitting with a paper, but you're not really even reading it.
Mm-mm.
You're just holding on to it like it's your bonky.
It's like, nah,
right?
You're going to take it away. Yeah. I'm not really reading it, and I know it. I wrote it.
Right.
Like, how could I forget what I thought? It's not like a play. What's the next line? You moron. I wrote it.
But it is, but that is a different skill. I mean, you're doing an hour 20 on stage and then go do 4.5 minutes.
Right.
Of
words.
Just, you know, where your things are together that normally don't
are not
go
together in a weird order. And,
right.
Yeah. And then cutting out half the joke because, you know, they're going to laugh here or clap here and they're not really going to hear the funny part.
It's a different, yeah.
Yeah. It's a totally different little art form, shall we call it.
Aha! Well, look who's an artist. You're listening to Come to Papa on Raw Dog Sirius XM 99. I am sitting with my good friend Kathleen Madigan. Is there any other kind of... You mentioned the Tonight Show is one of those areas that's kind of different and will kind of not wig you out, but you have to pay a little different attention. Is there any other environment now you've done?
Dr. Phil is real weird.
Dr. Phil,
yeah. That show.
Yeah.
He actually heard me on Sirius Radio.
He likes comedy.
He does. He loves Ron White.
Yeah.
And he's like, I like that little Kathleen Maddie. And Ron's like, oh, I know her. And some of his shows, he wants to be lighter in tone.
Right, sure.
Right? So, okay, sure, I'll come. I'll show up. Also, having no idea how many people watch Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
I mean, like, my little brother's like, what's up, buddy? You're on Dr. Phil and you don't tell me? I'm like, aren't you at work? He goes, I am, but my phones blew up with my unemployed buddies. They're all calling. And I go, you know, Pat, I also think all your friends just outed themselves.
Yeah.
Really?
Right.
You know, I'm watching Dr. Phil, whatever.
In the middle of the day. Yeah,
he's
huge audience,
so,
though.
It's millions and millions
huge,
of people. Like,
huge.
I didn't even think twice about... I didn't even put it online or anything.
Yeah.
It's daytime. In my head, it's not nighttime.
Yeah.
Nighttime TV.
It's not real TV.
Different, right? It's not real.
Yeah.
Like, when I would do the Bonnie Hunt show, I didn't even really practice.
Yeah.
I thought of a little set. I'm like, that's cute.
And were those
for the
sets?
Daytime, great.
She
had great audiences, too, though. She really did.
Were they more...
Midwesty people.
I don't know if you can compare, but were they more free than doing a late night set? Because of how you approached it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Everybody was like, oh, apparently I've been the one causing all the stress. Because if you just relax and go, yeah, it's all good.
Right.
They go, oh, great, can't wait to see you. Have fun out there. Okay, let's have fun. But Dr. Phil, it's a fine line. Because on the show, some of those topics are serious. It's not, I'm not doing stand-up comedy. I'm just supposed to be the funny lady in a weird situation.
Right.
And sometimes it gets really heavy, and you know, you have to guess. And he gives no instructions. What I love about his show is who's ever on, he has like a football team meeting. He goes, well, gang, today we're going to be talking about, got a couple couples out here that aren't having a lot of sex. That's not good. We're going to try to help them out.
Right.
Then we got some shoplifters. That's getting weird. And everybody just chime in when you want. And that there's no, like, we're so used to shows being A, B, C, D, and they're organized, and here's this segment and that. There's no, I don't know where I'm going to be sitting. Somebody hands me a mic. Right. Then they're like, Kathleen, get come on back up.
We're
then
just
I'm back
making
on stage
TV,
with
not
them.
A big deal.
It's just a program. We're going to sit here a couple of hours and have some fun.
Just
and,
talking.
Oh, there's Robin, and she's so nice. Like, she jumps up and down when she sees me.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm like, wow. Well, I'm not ever that excited to see me.
Isn't that such a key, though, to comedy, just that you... I mean, you really just, it's a matter, and this is why it's years and years, is because you are funny. You show up as, day one, as the comedian. You are funny. That's why you're there. And then you get into all of these scenarios that challenge you being able to be free and be yourself and be that funny person.
Right, like what lines are we...
Yeah, what lines are we going to say? What's the circumstance?
I know the lines to cross. Like, can I say this? Is he going to get mad?
Right.
Is this going to be offensive?
And it's all stuff that kind of starts to attack your confidence.
Yeah.
And then it's like, this is where all the years come in. All of a sudden, you go through all of it, and you pop out as the kid that started out in the first place.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There also has to be an element, I think, for myself of, in my head, I don't care. It was Andy Warhol. Andy Warhol's thing was, who cares? Okay, if you put who cares at the end of every sentence, eventually nothing matters.
Right.
Not in a bad way.
Right.
In a let go way.
Right.
Like, not in a sad, depressing way, but like, okay, well, you know, if I don't get to the job on time, I might lose the job, and then I might lose my house, and then I might end up in an apartment, and I might get hit by a bus. Who cares? It's over.
Right.
You know, there has to be, like, the element of Dr. Phil. I was like, well, I've been given no instructions. I'm just truly going to have fun. I know people always say that. Oh, go have fun. But we always know.
Right.
No. Fun is beer and video poker. This is work.
I'm working. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yes, if this is fun, I'd be on a surfboard doing it. Do you see a surfboard or an ocean underneath me? No.
I wouldn't have combed my hair like this.
I wouldn't have waxed my eyebrows. It's still work. But on some level, you just have to go, okay, I have to have fun.
Right. Yeah, completely.
And I do on that show, and then it just is funny.
Yeah, it's so strange. Because whenever I open up and we'll be like, let it be known that I really care about a set on a show or something and show any kind of weakness. People are like,
to the universe.
What? You know, to anybody. Like, if I would just be like, even like backstage, like just to the guy who was like putting on the mic or whatever, and be like, you know, any kind of, if I express any honest anxiety, they're like, what are you talking about? You're just funny. Get out there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, And it's like, well, there's a little more going on in my head than just that.
Right, exactly.
And then, you know, there's X amount of people. Like, that was a good thing about going to Dr. Phil, too. I didn't know how many people watch. And again, comic mindset.
Yeah.
Nobody, daytime TV doesn't matter. This is pretend land.
Right, yeah.
This is
just what you watch when you're getting ready for your nap.
Yeah, people are in the gym. They can't hear it. It's on mute. So, yeah, I still get nervous at corporate gigs because I still know they can suck.
Because it's that unknown.
Yeah, there's 1,000 people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the more money I make, the bigger the crowds get. And like
the more
the corporate private stuff. Yeah. So the more people you figure out of 1,000, I could get at least half. So 500 people laughing, this can't be that bad.
Right.
But it's there's 40 executives from Chevron.
Well,
in
we
the
did that
back
one.
Room.
We did that one in D.C. together.
That was
for a tobacco company.
Yeah.
And it was literally like in downstairs of this hotel in the bar. There was like 40 people there.
Yeah. It was very strange.
And we were basically back to
square
you're getting
one.
Paid a lot of money, but you're back to square one. You're back in a bar, you and I, waiting to go on. And you went on first and just went up just like you were talking to them at the bar and destroyed.
They were fun. You killed them, but it was great.
But I was sweating it in the beginning because I was like, I can't do what she just did because she's just so funny. And I'm about to on stage.
We just got lucky because I've done the same crap in front of 40 other executives and it didn't work at all.
That's
you should have
been
one of those. You had a lot more fun side stage going, well, I can certainly do better than this. That's what you would have thought. Like, you would have also gone up and eaten it and went, wow, it's them. It's not her.
Right.
I was holding out hope that she's having an off night.
It was such a great time, actually, that gig because we have kind of similar careers in that we both play a lot of these corporate gigs because we're not really dirty comedians.
Right.
We're kind of, we and to but we're off doing corporate gigs in separate places or headlining in different places. And then to be like matched up for one night where we're both in the same spot dealing with this corporate environment where you're usually a lone wolf.
Which is right. It was way better having you be anxious and nervous right. with me. Like yeah. now I have company.
And then knowing also we both like to end with a martini at the end
yes,
of it.
Yes.
Out on the patio.
How soon till we get drinks?
right.
Where can I go smoke?
That was the worst part of it is watching you drink while I was up there.
I know. That's why I always want to go first because I do a lot of them with Panette. Yeah. Not a lot, but a few, like maybe three or four a year. And he always yeah. wants to go last. I'm like, perfect. Because this crowd's either going to be good or not.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to eat it,
yeah.
I'd rather eat it quickly and get to the bar. How fast can I get to the bar? Because I would be completely appalled if I yeah. sat on the side and watched you or John eat it.
Yeah.
Because then I'd be like,
oh, this is going to be
oh
awful.
Oh, my God. And they're going to be tired of being right. mean. This yeah. crowd's going to get exhausted of staring at us. Like, by the time I get up there, that's an hour that they're just grumbling.
Yeah.
Tired. Yeah. At least they got a fresh band crowd.
Right. That was really fun. And this was really fun talking to you. And if I may just note before we leave, you brought up Andy Warhol. And you work in a very free, let the universe kind of come to me, who cares kind of attitude. And I'm going to say it because you won't. You, my friend, are an artist.
Okay.
And yes,
I'll
are.
Still walk away like I do from Luca, whatever. I'm a rogue comic. But
you may have buffalo wing on, sauce on your fingers. And you may spend a lot of time doing shots in bars. But so do a lot of rock stars.
All right. Okay. Point taken.
You rock.
See ya.
Thanks. Come to Papa.